It is important to realise that 83% of people who commit suicide or attempt suicide have had contact with a doctor within a year of their death, and up to 66% of people who commit or attempt suicide have had such contact within a month of their death. Therefore, with better prevention techniques, these figures could be reduced. We can divide suicide prevention into three categories, which are primary, secondary, or tertiary. Secondary suicide prevention aims to decrease the likelihood of a suicide attempt in high-risk patients. Tertiary suicide prevention occurs in response to completed suicides and attempts to diminish suicide in a particular geographical area or in a particular age group. I would now like to look at secondary suicide prevention in more detail. Secondary suicide prevention is particularly important, but not always given the attention that it deserves, in part because research into secondary prevention is only just starting to be applied to clinical practice. Now, from a clinical perspective, suicide is often difficult to predict due to its complex nature. The three major risk factors that contribute to suicidal behaviour are biological, psychological, and proximal stresses, which are recent events that can lead to increased suicide risk. Firstly, there are biological risk factors for suicide, which include low blood cholesterol levels, medical or neurological illnesses such as multiple sclerosis, stroke, Huntington disease and epilepsy, cigarette smoking. Secondly, there are psychological risk factors which include a childhood history of physical or sexual abuse, aggressive personality traits, low self-esteem, and poor access to psychiatric treatment. Thirdly, there are proximal stresses or the recent events that can lead to increased suicide risk, and these include relationship problems with a spouse, partner, or loved one, financial troubles caused by unemployment or large amounts of debt, a family history of suicide, major depression, and drug abuse. The clinical evaluation of the medical and psychiatric history of a patient and of their current state is the crucial and essential element of the suicide assessment process. It is important because it enables the identification of risk factors in order to determine the patient's immediate safety and the best setting for treatment, and also to develop diagnosis and treatment strategies. Psychiatric illness is a major contributing factor to suicide risk, with mood disorders such as major depressive disorder and bipolar disorder being associated with about 60% of suicides. Indeed, psychiatric disorders are diagnosed in more than 90% of completed suicides, and more than 80% of these psychiatric disorders are untreated. Thus, the recognition and treatment of individuals with psychiatric disorders, specifically mood disorders, are essential components of secondary suicide prevention. In addition, the subjective rating of the severity of depression is one of the most powerful predictors of future suicidal acts. Therefore, assessing and managing depression, as well as being aware of the suicide risks in psychologically, medically, and neurologically disordered individuals, is an important aspect of secondary suicide prevention. Consequently, physicians need to be taught to recognize the association between mental disorders and suicide. Additional information about the individual who may be at risk for suicide, such as medical and psychiatric treatment records and toxicology screenings, should also be incorporated into the assessment. Equally importantly, clinicians and other professionals in a position to offer help should not hesitate to ask patients about suicidal ideation because, while it may seem surprising, patients will often talk frankly about their suicidal thoughts and tendencies if given the opportunity. Failure to ask about suicidal ideation may be related to the health professional's discomfort with the topic, lack of time, or lack of skills in this area. Clinicians need to overcome these obstacles to provide appropriate care to their patients. What are the most effective secondary suicide prevention strategies? In a recent systematic review of suicide prevention strategies, Mann, along with other researchers, found evidence of effectiveness in 5 secondary suicide prevention methods, including pharmacological interventions, psychological interventions, follow-up care, reduced access to lethal means, and responsible media reporting of suicide. Antidepressant medications are the most widely used pharmacological interventions in secondary suicide prevention, but studies of their effectiveness in reducing suicide attempts have had mixed results. Among adults younger than 25, the effect of antidepressants seems to be neutral on suicidal behaviour, but it seems to reduce the risk of suicidal behaviour in the elderly. Thus, the relation between antidepressants and suicide needs further studies before this class of drugs can be safely used for the secondary prevention of suicide. In terms of psychological interventions, suicidal patients often benefit from therapies that address the repetition of suicidal thoughts and behaviours, and other factors commonly associated with suicide. Better psychological and pharmacological treatment of depression and alcoholism also appears to decrease suicide rates. Social factors that should be addressed in follow-up treatment include availability and willingness of supports within the family. Support individuals who should be contacted about the suicide risk and follow-up arrangements include general practitioners, private psychiatrists, family and friends. Some interventions, however, such as telephone and psychosocial follow-up, have shown no difference in suicidal ideation when compared with standard aftercare. Many studies show that suicides by particular methods, for example, firearms, domestic gas or pesticides, decrease after the introduction of legal restrictions that reduce access to such means. This reduction in suicide rates is particularly influential in regions where the specific means of restriction correlates with a common method of suicide. For example, in the UK, the reduction of carbon monoxide in domestic gas since 1958 and the reduced availability of analgesics since the mid-1990s have both decreased UK suicide rates. Finally, many studies have exposed a need for a decrease in reporting of suicide and for responsible reporting. Media blackouts in reporting suicide have coincided with a decrease in suicide rates because reports of suicide in the media tend to glamorise suicide for vulnerable individuals. The internet is also of increasing concern, with blogs and chat rooms providing accessible instructions for suicide. For these reasons, guidelines have recently been produced for the responsible reporting of suicide. Despite our increasing knowledge about secondary suicide prevention, there are still many gaps in the research, and looking to the future, thorough evaluations and appropriate treatments of patients with depressive disorders and other psychiatric illnesses should help to improve the efficacy of secondary prevention of suicide. But it is also clear that more research into new approaches for the prevention and treatment of suicidal behaviour remains essential.